I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blast tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99. each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday, good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Philosophy Now. In today's episode, we're journeying into the life and philosophy of one of the most influential thinkers in human history. If you've been following our series, we've already delved into the enigmatic Heraclitus, the probing Socrates, and the visionary Plato. Now we turn to Plato's star pupil, who would go on to chart a new course in nearly every field of inquiry, from biology and logic to ethics and politics. Aristotle's mind was hyper-focused of empirical observation and abstract thought. He laid the foundation for Western sciences, shaped medieval and Islamic scholarship, and remains a reference point in contemporary philosophy and science. Let's explore his life story, the intellectual climate of 4th century BCE Greece, and the breadth of his enduring legacy. Buckle up. This is going to be a deep and fascinating dive.
Aristotle was born in 384 BCE in Stagira, a small town in the region of Macedonia. His father, Nicomachus, was a physician in the court of King Amyntas III, the grandfather of Alexander the Great. This medical background introduced young Aristotle to empirical observation and the study of living organisms at an early age. Growing up around the royal Macedonian court, Aristotle likely had access to an array of knowledge about plants, animals, and human health, sparking his lifelong interest in biology and the natural sciences. Aristotle's parents passed away when he was still relatively young, and he was placed under the guardianship of Proxenus of Atarneus, who ensured his education continued. Around the age of 17, Aristotle traveled to Athens, the intellectual heart of Greece, to study at Plato's Academy. It was there he would spend roughly 2 decades refining his thinking under the influence of Plato himself. The Academy was a bustling hub of philosophical exploration. Alongside Plato's lectures on the theory of forms, students engaged in mathematics, cosmology, and political theory. While little survives from this period, Aristotle's time at the Academy shaped his initial philosophical leanings. However, he would later diverge from many of Plato's doctrines, especially on the nature of forms. From the start, Aristotle was surrounded by luminaries in logic, mathematics, and ethics. This environment fertilized the seeds of his expansive intellect. Yet even in his early years, he demonstrated a distinctive empirical streak, a desire to look at the concrete world rather than just the realm of abstract ideas. After Plato's death in 347 BCE, leadership of the Academy passed to Speusippus, not Aristotle. This shift, coupled with Aristotle's growing philosophical disagreements with Platonism, likely contributed to his departure. Aristotle moved to Atarnius in Asia Minor, present-day Turkey, where he became associated with Hermias, a former student of Plato. Hermias ruled the region and provided a haven for philosophical pursuit. During his stay, Aristotle married Pythias, thought to be a relative or adoptive daughter of Hermias. This personal connection grounded him further in the local aristocracy. Aristotle, alongside fellow philosophers like Xenocrates and Theophrastus, engaged in dialogue about politics, ethics, and the study of nature. Some of Aristotle's early biological investigations might have taken shape here, given the region's diverse flora and fauna. On the island of Lesbos, Aristotle's natural investigations deepened. He studied marine life extensively, observing fish and invertebrates in coastal waters. Another of Plato's disciples, Theophrastus, was also fascinated by the natural world. Together, they embarked on a systematic study of plants and animals, efforts that presaged the birth of modern biology. Around 343/342 BCE, Aristotle was invited to return to the Macedonian court to tutor the young Prince Alexander, the future Alexander the Great. Under Aristotle's guidance, Alexander supposedly studied ethics, politics, geography, and medicine. Although details are scarce, legends suggest that Aristotle's tutorship instilled a lifelong appreciation for Greek culture in Alexander. Aristotle's ties to Alexander's father, King Philip II, also placed him at the center of Macedonian power. This courtly environment exposed him to realpolitik, an influence seen later in his work on politics and rhetoric. During these travels, Aristotle's philosophy matured from Plato's abstract idealism into a more grounded, observational, and analytical approach. By the time he returned to Athens in the mid-300s BCE, he was ready to found his own school and carve out a legacy distinct from his teachers. In 335 BCE, after Alexander conquered Athens, Aristotle returned to the city under relatively favorable conditions for a Macedonian. He set up his school, the Lyceum, in a gymnasium named for Apollo Lyceus. The Lyceum students were often called peripatetics, from the Greek word peripatein, to walk around, referencing Aristotle's habit of strolling about while teaching. Unlike Plato's Academy, which leaned toward mathematics and forms, the Lyceum encompassed a broader range of studies: biology, physics, logic, ethics, rhetoric, and politics. Imagine a bustling scholarly community with daily lectures, discussions in shaded colonnades, dissected animals for biology demonstrations, and lively debates on the best form of government. The Lyceum was essentially the world's first research university, Aristotle's crowning institutional achievement, where data collection and systematic analysis of all fields flourished. Aristotle's written output is colossal, though much of what remains are lecture notes or texts possibly compiled by later editors. Let's highlight some areas of his massive body of work. Now, let's dig into Aristotle's major contributions across different areas of philosophy. And keep in mind that he didn't just dabble in these subjects. he helped lay the foundation for them all. First up is logic, often grouped under what later writers called the Organon. Aristotle essentially invented formal logic, especially in works like his Categories, On Interpretation, and Prior Analytics. By structuring arguments into syllogisms, where premises lead deductively to a conclusion, he provided a system of reasoning that dominated Western thought for nearly 2,000 years, deeply influencing both medieval scholasticism and Islamic philosophy. For that long stretch of time, if you were studying valid reasoning, odds are you were using a playbook rooted in Aristotle's logical writings. In his Physics, he explores basic concepts like substance, motion, and causality. He's the one who famously put forward the four causes. Then, in works like History of Animals and On the Parts of Animals, he's practically an early biologist, systematically observing and classifying living species. Meanwhile, in astronomy and cosmology, Aristotle proposed a geocentric universe with Earth at the center, enclosed by celestial spheres. Even though that idea lasted until the Copernican Revolution challenged it, it gives us a sense of how influential he was for centuries on end. We move now to metaphysics. Often considered the centerpiece of Aristotle's philosophy, he called it the study of being qua being, basically the nature of existence. Though the label metaphysics was actually given posthumously, it fits perfectly. Here, Aristotle sets himself apart from Plato by placing the forms, or essential natures, within substances themselves, rather than in some separate realm. That's a huge shift. It makes the real world, this tangible world around us, where form and matter unite. Then we have ethics and politics, where Aristotle's personal stamp on moral and civic life remains firmly with us. His Nicomachean Ethics, named for his son Nicomachus, by the way, spells out the doctrine of the golden mean, highlighting virtue as the middle path between two extremes. So if you're talking about courage, for instance, it's somewhere between cowardice and recklessness. He also tackled the best ways to structure a community in his Politics, analyzing different constitutions and how they serve, or fail, citizens. Underneath it all, Aristotle used the concept of eudaimonia, which we often translate as flourishing or happiness, to describe the ultimate goal of life, achieved by developing a rational, virtuous character. Finally, we come to rhetoric and poetics, where Aristotle examines how persuasion and storytelling can impact our emotional and moral experience. In his Rhetoric, he breaks down how to be persuasive, reminding us that logic, logos, credibility, ethos, and emotion, pathos, all matter. And in poetics, he zeroes in on drama, especially tragedy, defining concepts like catharsis, explaining how a good plot should be structured, and describing the role of the tragic hero. If you've seen any dramatic story that pulls at your emotions, there's a good chance it owes something to Aristotle's original breakdown of how stories work on us. So, Whether we're talking about formal logic and valid reasoning, how to live the best life through virtuous balance, or how to craft a gripping story that moves us deeply, Aristotle's fingerprints are everywhere. Over two millennia later, we're still arguing with, building on, and refining what he set down. Pretty remarkable for a thinker who was dissecting fish and examining celestial spheres in ancient Greece. It's mind-boggling how one individual could shape so many disciplines. Aristotle was both a systematic logician and a hands-on biologist, a deep metaphysician and a pioneer in literary criticism. His texts, though occasionally fragmentary, testify to an unparalleled breadth of intellectual ambition. A central divergence from Plato lies in where each thinker locates the essence of reality. For Plato, eternal forms existed in a transcendent realm. For Aristotle, form is intimately united with matter in each object. No separate realm required. This shift from heavenly perfection to tangible embodiment underscores Aristotle's empirical leanings. Aristotle's concept that every physical entity is composed of matter and form, rather than a perfect blueprint existing beyond the physical, the form is realized within the substance. Rejecting Plato's notion that knowledge is a recollection of the forms, Aristotle insisted we gain knowledge primarily through sense experience and rational abstraction. Plato emphasized innate knowledge of the forms, with the senses providing only imperfect copies. Replace forms with genes, and we see yet another example of Plato's ability to illuminate the unseen. Aristotle believed the mind starts as a blank slate and acquires concepts through observation, induction, and reasoning. So life experiences shape us, not something mysterious, innate like forms. On the subject of the ideal state versus the best possible state, Plato's The Republic outlines an idealized state ruled by philosopher kings, largely removed from everyday politics. Aristotle's Politics focuses on analyzing existing city-states, highlighting democracy, oligarchy, and monarchy as workable systems, though all have flaws. He sought a mixed constitution, often praising the stable middle class, far more pragmatic than Plato's utopian blueprint. Aristotle's final years in Athens weren't free from turmoil. With Alexander the Great's death in 323 BCE, anti-Macedonian sentiment flared in Athens. Aristotle, given his strong Macedonian connections, became a prime target. As with Socrates, charges of impiety were brought against Aristotle, perhaps due to jealousy or political animosity. Famously, he is said to have remarked that he wouldn't let Athens sin twice against philosophy, referencing Socrates' execution. Aristotle decided to flee to Chalcis on the island of Euboea, likely to avoid a trial. Aristotle died there in 322 BCE of natural causes. He was about 62 years old. Much of Aristotle's corpus survived the fall of Rome via Arabic translations and commentaries. He was revered as the first teacher in the Islamic Golden Age. In the 13th century, Thomas Aquinas called him simply the philosopher, weaving Aristotelian logic and metaphysics into Christian theology. Some sources claim Alexander funded Aristotle's research, sending him exotic plants and animals from his conquests. While not definitively proven, it paints a fascinating picture of an early research grant. Aristotle and his students gathered the constitutions of 158 Greek city-states, using them as data for his political treatise. Fragments of the Constitution of the Athenians were discovered in the late 19th century, confirming his meticulous empirical approach. Aristotle allegedly wrote exoteric works for the general public, many of which are lost, and esoteric works, the lecture notes we now have, primarily for his advanced students at the Lyceum. Ancient sources mention that Aristotle's will included provisions for the care of his children and slaves, underscoring the norms of ancient Greek society. Let's listen into how Aristotle's lectures at Lyceum may have sounded like 2,500 years ago.
Ah, good morning, my eager minds. Today, we explore the profound concepts at the heart of existence. Matter and form. These are fundamental to understanding not only philosophy, but the very nature of the world around us. Let us begin simply. Everything you see, touch, or sense around you consists of matter. Matter, my students, is potentiality itself. Imagine clay. Simple, shapeless clay. This clay holds infinite possibilities. It can become a pot, a statue, even a vessel for water. But until it is shaped, it remains mere potential. Now, what transforms this potential into reality? Form. Form is actuality. It is the essence that defines what a thing truly is. If matter is potentiality, then form is the realization of that potential. The clay gains its purpose, its function, through form. The potter, using reason and skill, imposes form upon matter, creating something defined and useful from mere possibility. Consider a statue crafted by an artisan. What makes it a statue? Not simply the marble from which it is carved, but the intentional design that the sculptor imparts. Without this design, this purpose, it remains only a lump of marble. The statue's form is its essence, what it fundamentally is meant to be. It defines its identity, its very nature. You might then ask, what of living beings? Excellent question. Consider an oak tree. Its matter is the seed, the soil, and water, mere possibilities. But the form of the oak tree is contained within the seed itself, guiding it to grow and realize its full potential as a mighty tree. Thus, form governs and directs the development of matter toward its ultimate purpose. This interplay of matter and form is crucial. It is evident in everything, from the humblest pebble to the stars themselves. Matter without form is chaos, undirected potential. Form without matter. It cannot exist physically. It remains merely an idea, a concept waiting to be actualized. Thus, my students, recognize this duality in your own lives. You yourselves possess matter, your bodies, and form, your rational souls. Your purpose, your telos, is to actualize your potential through reason, virtue, and the pursuit of knowledge. Embrace this wisdom, and you shall truly understand the nature of reality itself. Now reflect deeply on this, my students. Remember always, matter is possibility, form is actuality, and together they compose the very essence of everything. Class dismissed.
Thank you for joining me for this extended, in-depth look at Aristotle. In our next installment, we'll leap into the Hellenistic period and explore the Stoics, Epicureans, and Skeptics, seeing how the philosophical landscape evolved after Aristotle's passing. If you found this episode enlightening, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your fellow seekers of knowledge. Until next time, remember Aristotle's guiding principle. All men by nature desire to know. May we all keep that curiosity alive in our daily lives.
Some sources claim Alexander funded Aristotle's research, sending him exotic plants and animals from his conquests. While not definitively proven, it paints a fascinating picture of an early research grant. Aristotle and his students gathered the constitutions of 158 Greek city-states, using them as data for his political treatise. Fragments of the Constitution of the Athenians were discovered in the late 19th century, confirming his meticulous empirical approach. Aristotle allegedly wrote exoteric works for the general public, many of which are lost, and esoteric works, the lecture notes we now have, primarily for his advanced students at the Lyceum. Ancient sources mention that Aristotle's will included provisions for the care of his children and slaves, underscoring the norms of ancient Greek society.